News: Cubs reliever Kouji Fujikawa will have Tommy John surgery to repair a torn ligament in his right elbow and will miss the rest of the season. No date has been set for his surgery. The Cubs-White Sox series shifts to the north side of Chicago this afternoon. Scott Feldman versus John Dinks is the pitching matchup. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media News.
WILL programs are made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal in Champaign. Eastern Rug Gallery offers professional cleaning and repair service for Oriental and other handmade rugs and provides repair and restoration services for fringe and sides, holes, rips, and animal stains.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL, AM 580, and FM 90.9. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather for the rest of today. Mostly sunny with a high of 85 expected and south winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts getting up to around 25 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 68 expected. By tomorrow, we're expecting some rain again, partly sunny with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high of 84. It's going to be very breezy, though, with south winds getting up to about 30 miles per hour with gusts. Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms are likely with a low of 67, south winds of 15 to 20 miles an hour, and a 60% chance of rain. And looking ahead to the weekend, by Friday, 60% chance of rain and a high of 82. And then Saturday, showers and thunderstorms are likely, 80% chance of rain. You're listening to WILL Radio.
Support comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. This Thursday, May 30th, from 5 to 8 p.m., the Corkscrew will be pairing up with Prairie Fruits Farms and the Original Wine Company to host a spring celebration of cheese and wine. Tickets are available at the door or by calling the Corkscrew at 337-7704.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. Drones have been a controversial military weapon this past decade, and just last week, President Obama set tighter standards and oversight for their use. As debate over military drones has continued, there's another debate going on about the use of them in non-combat situations right here in the United States. Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers has this report.
If you want to talk to a group that's thinking about the future of drone technology, you don't have to go any further than Urbana High School.
Dude, I'm serious. They use it for that. They use drones for that. Do you not know that?
Yeah, I know, but yeah. It's not the best example.
That's what I know.
It's not the best example.
Freshmen Tashree Kondekar and Henry Ando, along with more than a dozen other Urbana High School students, are building their own drone, which looks like a model airplane. They've been meeting every Tuesday since the beginning of the school year as part of an after-school science club. Freshman Fiona Monroe shows off a camera she's been trying to perfect that can be inserted inside the drone.
We've got a little tiny piece of eraser underneath a rubber band on top of the button that will take the pictures. When it's in the plane like this, it will just take pictures at a continuous rate of anything underneath it.
Other students, like freshman Jared Hatcher, are programming the drone's GPS navigator.
We're not working with the camera itself. However, the main thing we've been doing is making a program that will basically take the pictures the camera will eventually take and put GPS coordinates into them based on where they would have been at that point in time.
Matt Schroyer has been teaching these students how to build the drone. As part of a National Science Foundation grant, he developed the after-school program to improve science education in the classroom. Schroyer works on the program through the University of Illinois' College of Education. He's been talking about drones all year at high schools in Urbana and Tuscola and grade schools in Champaign. As schools look to beef up their science curriculums, Schroyer says this technology is a really good entryway into engineering.
We're looking at taking what we've learned from this program, integrating it in the future. We think there's a lot of potential for aerial robots and other robots to be an important part of STEM education, especially the engineering part.
Schroyer says civilian drones can be used by farmers surveying crop conditions, news reporters covering a story, and emergency personnel putting out a fire or looking for a missing person. But he says the first time most people are introduced to this technology is usually through a gruesome news report of a military drone attack overseas. As we're talking, he picks up a February issue of Time magazine.
I mean, here's a copy, Time's Rise of the Drones, and they're showing a Predator Reaper above a house in the United States. And that couldn't be further from what we're working on in this classroom and what we hope to accomplish.
The Federal Aviation Administration estimates about 7,500 small commercial drones could be in the skies in the U.S. in about 5 years. But right now, private businesses are not officially allowed to use them. The FAA only grants certificates for drones to public bodies like government agencies, state universities, and law enforcement. Beyond that are hobby drones, which don't need a certificate but face strict limits that keep them at low altitude, within the operator's sight, and away from urban areas and other aircraft. The Champaign County Sheriff's Department has a drone, but Sheriff Dan Walsh doesn't want to use it until he sees what regulations come down the pipeline. He says he has no interest in using drones as weapons, but thinks they could be useful in tracking down stolen property, reconstructing accidents and crime scenes, and search and rescue missions.
We had a case where we had an individual who disappeared with his vehicle. There was concerns about self-harm. Ultimately, it was located several miles from his home. I don't remember whether it was between a 1 and 2 week period before it was found. Unfortunately, he had committed suicide. Well, if you can search something like that from the air very quickly, perhaps there could have been a different outcome. I don't know.
But a proposal in the Illinois Senate would restrict the way Walsh uses a drone by requiring a search warrant before looking over private property. However, he wouldn't need a warrant for flights over public property, like roads or highways. Muhammad Republican Chapin Rose is a co-sponsor of the measure.
You just couldn't fly up into somebody's window and look in on a regular basis. And you know, I think that this brave new world that we're in, we really need to sit back and have a long, philosophical, thoughtful conversation about how we're going to use these things, when and where.
Senator Rose admits he's more concerned about the general public using drones to spy on people than he is about police officers. Still, Sheriff Walsh says requiring police to get search warrants before they can fly a drone could burn up an hour or two of time investigating a case.
Other people, I suspect, think we're going to fly over looking for marijuana fields. We truly have better things to do with our time than that, believe it or not. And other people just think we're going to just constantly spy on them. If we're going to watch somebody overhead like that, I think is not a very useful way of doing it.
Congress is currently debating the use of drones within U.S. borders. On the state level, the National Conference of State Legislatures says 43 states have introduced bills and resolutions concerning unmanned aerial systems. That includes a resolution in Indiana to form a study committee on the issue. Its sponsor, Republican State Senator Jim Toms, says while the devices can be useful for the military, he has privacy and safety concerns about their use by the public.
It's the propensity sometimes of mankind to abuse technology. We've seen this happen with the Internet and people that hack into systems. And we can't be fooling ourselves that there's not a potential for abuse.
The FAA is searching for 6 sites in the country to test out civilian and military drones and recently asked states to apply to be considered. According to the FAA, Illinois and Indiana didn't apply, but 24 other states did.
We project that more than 100,000 new jobs will be created by 2025 in states that create a favorable regulatory and business environment for the industry.
That's Mario Moreno with the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. He says it'll be an economic boon for states that make themselves available to companies looking to test drones.
What's happening is, what we fear is that companies are going to, we're not only going to lose technology, we're going to lose potentially jobs if we're not able to test and be able to utilize these assets here. Companies are going to go abroad where they're already doing testing and the regulatory environment is not as constricting as it is here.
The FAA has until 2015 to meet a federal mandate allowing a greater use of drones in the civilian airspace. But as their technology and availability expand, critics continue to ask questions about the potential privacy and safety risks that could follow. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
You're listening to WILL. Nothing lives forever, but bryophytes come pretty close. Scientists have found a kind of plant in the Canadian Arctic that started growing again after being buried under a glacier for more than 400 years. NPR's Joe Palka has more.
Bryophytes don't get much respect. They're not the gaudy seed plants people plant in their gardens or give as gifts. Jonathan Shaw runs the bryology lab at Duke University.
They're the kinds of things that you see covering a rotting log or in some cases in people's lawns, and they either love that because they don't have to mow the grass or they hate that because it's taking over the lawn.
Me, I love bryophytes. Probably the most famous bryophyte is moss, and moss has a habit of remaining green for a long time.
After 100 years, a moss may look perfectly natural and even retain its green color.
Shaw says one of the other amazing things about bryophytes is their ability to regenerate.
There are examples of bryophytes regenerating after decades in a dried condition.
So Shaw wasn't totally surprised when he read in the latest issue of the journal PNAS what Catherine Lafarge found on Ellesmere Island in the Canadian Arctic. She and her colleagues had been looking at what the Teardrop Glacier was leaving behind as it receded. And in recent years, it's been receding rather rapidly.
It's like lifting a blanket.
You get to see whatever was buried underneath.
We were aware that there was vegetation coming out from underneath the glaciers, but we had no idea that there was such a diversity of bryophytes that were actually coming out from underneath the glaciers.
She took some of the bryophytes back to her lab in Alberta to learn what being entombed in ice for 400 years had done to them. Lafarge knows bryophytes regenerate, but she was still surprised when she saw the plants that she brought back from the Arctic were growing.
So we thought, that is just pretty bizarre, thinking that they had been exhumed from underneath the glacier and they're actually, you know, producing new growth.
As more glaciers recede around the world, Lafarge says we are likely to see more bryophytes appearing and starting to grow again. And if they can transform the rubbly landscape left behind by glaciers, they might finally get some respect. Joe Palca, NPR News.
You're listening to WILL.
WILL programming is made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents the CU area at its best.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. The Peoria Bach Festival is held annually during the first week of June with performances by local and visiting musicians. This year's festival begins on Friday and runs through June 9th. I'll talk with co-director Martin Dickey on the Wednesday edition of Live and Local. We'll also hear a live preview of this weekend's production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream by a Champaign-Urbana-based homeschool theater troupe. Please join me for Live and Local, weekdays at 4 p.m. on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 29th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of the economist Stephen Levitt, born in St. Paul, Minnesota, 1967, who, with his co-author Stephen J. Dubner, published Freakonomics, A Rogue Economist Explores the Hidden Side of Everything. It was a bestseller in 2005. Time magazine named him to their list of 100 people who shape our world. It's the birthday of Bob Hope, the comedian born 1903 in Eltham, near London. Leslie Towns Hope. Family moved to this country when he was 4 years old. He grew up in Cleveland, got into vaudeville at the age of 10. And by 1940, he was one of the most popular comedians in America. His comedy, verbal, not physical, and he usually played unsympathetic characters that the audience could feel superior to, died in 2003, a few weeks after his 100th birthday. It's the birthday of the author G.K. Chesterton, Gilbert Keith Chesterton, born in London, 1874. He dabbled in the occult as a young man, then returned to the Church of England and converted to Catholicism later in life. He was a Christian who disagreed sharply with many people he knew, including H.G. Wells, George Bernard Shaw, but he was so good-humored that he kept them as close friends. He was also very prolific, wrote very fast, scarcely edited what he wrote, wrote some 80 books, fiction and criticism and literary biography and theology, poems, about 4,000 newspaper essays, created the character of Father Brown, a detective priest. And it's the birthday of the philosopher Oswald Spengler, born in Blankenberg, Germany, in 1880, who studied the history of civilizations and put forward the theory that they all undergo an organic blossoming and then a withering over the course of about 1,000 to 1,200 years. Each culture, he wrote, has its own new possibilities of self-expression which arise, ripen, decay, and never return. Best known for his book, The Decline of the West, in 1918, in which he examined six cultures, Egyptian, Chinese, Hindu, Greco-Roman, Arabic, and believed that Western civilization had already experienced its creative flowering and that it had at most 200 more years. Here's a poem for today by Linda Gregg, A Dark Thing Inside the Day. So many want to be lifted by song and dancing, and this morning it is easy to understand. I write in the sound of chirping birds hidden in the almond trees, the almonds still green and thriving in the foliage. Up the street, a man is hammering to make a new house as doves continue their cooing forever. Bees humming, and high above that,